This week on RSBV Update, a quest overview of Evil Dave's Big Day Out, and the debate of Bottle Quest versus Epic Story Quest. Also, the ribbon gains customization abilities, but how does it fit in with the overall RuneScape interface? And the combat winter weekend is upon us. Find out what we're doing. This is RSBV Update, episode 648, recorded Thursday, November 30th, 2017. A Hint of Orange. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week is Quest Week here once again at RSBNB Update, and we're doing it just like we always do with some people who have done the quest, and we're going to give it that RSBNB Update quest treatment. Joining me this week for Quest Week is Sirion. You guys all know him, love his voice. Welcome back.
Do they? Absolutely. Have they ever actually told you that they do, or is it just you?
I know people who do.
Okay, that's fine then.
Yeah. And also joining us is Sierra Pyro from Clan Quest, who has been on the show.
Who no one loves before. The voice of.
Hey, we like you.
I said the voice.
Hey, well, that's why we're all here, because we just have a voice, and you know, sometimes voices can be ugly too. I'm not insinuating that for any of us, because otherwise, I mean, who would listen to us, right? If we were all very screechy and whatnot. But
listen to Shane trying to dig himself out of a hole.
Come now, Sierra. You have a pretty good voice. But Evil Dave's Big Day Out quest, a standalone quest in RuneScape. We don't really have many of these days, do we? This is
not really.
Really.
It's a standalone quest, but it has some other quest requirements and references.
Yeah. And it almost felt as though it was breaking the fourth wall, just like the Gower quest did. Did you guys get that sense sometimes too, as well?
A little bit, but it not nearly as much.
No. This is actually the only the second quest to be released this year, aside from the four Menaphos quests, if you count those.
It is, and that's a little sad.
Yeah,
and the first quest this year was also you, Sarah, and me, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's right. Yeah. So I figured, why not make it two for two and get you guys back? And that was, of course, the Penguin quest.
Do we talk
what?
About
in what March?
Yeah, end of February, 1st of March. So, anyways, Evil Dave's Big Day Out. What did you guys think of this? We'll just get some initial thoughts right off the bat.
I didn't see that coming when the first body swap occurred. It's like, all right, this is the way we're going. All right, this is the route we're taking here.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see it coming either, and that's even after sort of like getting some spoilery material that I sort of glanced over. So, and what surprised me, because like, Darius has this habit of giving updates away a lot, and this quest, we knew it was coming. We knew it had Evil Dave and Zamorak, and that's all they gave us. And the whole quest, the entire thing, was a big surprise. And
yeah,
I think that
was
really, really nice.
Yeah. You know, in some ways, that's just like a quest back in the olden days, because we got zero information about what was going to be in these quests. So, the quest is classed as an intermediate level quest. You need 30 agility, cooking, herb lore, and magic to complete. And the quest requirements for this are, of course, the recipe for disaster chapter, where you free Evil Dave. So you do need to have
a
little bit of investment.
And yet it does reference one of the recipe for disaster bosses.
Yeah, it does. Oh. And that's what we had a lot of in this quest. Lots of cross RuneScape-y references here. And I don't know, maybe this is kind of like a good summary of RuneScape quests compared to where the Gower quest was a good summary of RuneScape as it is as a socio-phenomena kind of thing. Maybe that's.
I think this quest can be best described as fan service a lot.
Yes, definitely. So
yeah, What quest was were the Formarcos berries from, where you turn into a goblin? That was also referenced in there.
Was that goblin not goblin diplomacy?
No, goblin diplomacy.
Oh no, that's where you go in the Ardoin goblin place.
Yeah, you go in some goblin place, because they reference that too. Because when you go to the makeover mage, that's kind of what you talk about. The Farmakos berries.
It's the one where you.
It's the history
it must
one.
Be in the
it's in the goblin quest line.
I thought that was.
It's in
the
goblin
quest
line. I don't know. It's the one where you have to kill the priests as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's with the goblin priests.
Mm-hmm. We're doing a great job, aren't we? You know, members of Clan Quest, and we can't remember what quest that was.
Hey, it's in my defense, quest line. I got my quest cape in early 2010s.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So I haven't done most of the quests in many years, 5-6 years at least.
Yes, of course.
Land of the Goblins. I looked it up. It's Land of the Goblins.
I'm just pulling your leg, Sarah.
So the question is, because this is an intermediate quest, so you can do this like fairly soon into your quest stuff. It's definitely a 6-stage quest, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question is, does a player who like sort of does the normal progression of quests and then get to level 30 and does this quest, does that player get much out of it? That's the question.
In terms of experience and rewards, no, not really.
Well, not just that, but like the actual experience of doing it, because I enjoyed it, but that's because I knew a lot of the references and sort of recognized it in the wider context.
Yeah.
But like, if you just do it as a quest, as a story on its own, it doesn't really...
It's not going to make sense.
The quest is designed with the thought in mind that you know Evil Dave and how he is.
Fair enough. And you know that after doing the US before disaster, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's a Dave fan quest. It's a Dave fan service quest.
Right. And there's also the huge caveat here that if you don't read everything in the quest, and I mean, even we were just talking about the bookshelves, which we'll get to in a little bit. There's stuff you can read in the bookshelves beyond what you need to do for the quest. I didn't read the initial or the extra books that were available there. And you get something from that, too, with references to other quests. But
just so, in jokes.
There's a lot of in jokes in this quest, but what I found is that the quest is all pretty straightforward. So like, if you at some point you have to do stuff in the basement, and there's like 3 clickable things, and that's the 3 things you have to do. Like the whole quest was sort of laid out for you. Like everything was told what to do, which meant that in terms of like examines and like weird things that could happen, there were a couple of things, but like not the exploration that I sort of...
Yeah, not the exploration of an old-fashioned RS quest.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely right with that. And, I mean, all it takes, really, is you just, you know, move your mouse over all the objects in the room, and you can see what you need to click on. So...
Yes.
And, you know, there were no, you know, obscure puzzles to complete and whatnot, i.e. Temple Knights, which there was a reference to that there as well. That kind of test.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in just a little bit. So
no one tell Kitty about that one.
Oh, did he have problems with that?
No, it's just the whole cats joke.
Oh, gosh. Right. I actually thought of him when that was happening. For anyone who's wondering, there's this person in Clan Quest named Quest Kitty who, I guess the best way we can describe him has a strong affinity to cats and whatnot. So much so there's even a cult named after him in our clan. So.
Yeah, it's called the Bunch of Losers, I think.
There you
go. They have this weird plan to steal everyone's retirement funds. It's real weird.
Anyway, Sirion, let's have you run through an overview of this quest here, of just generally what we need to do in it.
All right. So this quest obviously starts in the evil basement of Doom. So yeah, in the old-fashioned RuneScape way, you walk up to Evil Dave, and the thing you say is, "I need a quest," because that's how you start quests in RuneScape in 2005. I don't
yep.
know.
Do you have any quests for me?
Sorry?
He just said, "Do you have any quests for me?"
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, Actually, Evil Dave has a quest for you. He needs you to help in the evil ritual of doom, 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 doom.
I think we've got enough dooms in there.
No, I don't know. I lost count at some point. Oh. So yeah, you agreed to help Evil Dave with ritual, and you have some problems with the handwriting of Evil Dave. So instead of doom, doomity, doom, 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 it's more like boom, boom, something, which has the nasty side effect that at the end of ritual, you and Dave have switched bodies.
I honestly think this was planned from the very beginning.
I don't know. I don't know if Dave is that smart or that act that legitimately conniving.
No, no. Dave did not plan this. No.
Okay.
I don't see that.
You know, this is also kind of Freaky Friday-esque. I don't know if you guys saw that movie from way back in the 2000s.
I've never seen the movie, but I do know the concept.
Yeah, okay.
It's freaky. It's absolutely Freaky Friday. That's become synonymous with switching bodies.
Anyway, you sort of pass out, and when you wake up, you're Dave. I should find out in a mirror. And, yourself, you, the World Guardian, is gone, that body. So yeah, you come up and Doris, Evil Dave's mom, is there and wants you to do some chores. So you do the chores, you clean the rug, you clean your bed, you do the dishes and you chop some vegetables. And after that, Dave's mom, your mom, it's complicated. I might slip up a few times. Dave's mom says you have to stay inside while she goes, I don't know, shopping.
Yeah, shopping to the exchange, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously you want to find your body back. No, wait. While you clean your bed, you fall asleep and you can actually see through the eyes of your own body, and you see that
there's bad stuff happening.
There's bad stuff happening. So your body has gone to Zamorak to offer his services to Zamorak, and Zamorak sends Dave in your body to Falador to spy on a super secret Temple Knight meeting. So yeah, you need to get to Falador, of course, to find your body. But the problem is Evil Dave was banned from Falador. So you need a disguise. And what better disguise than changing your gender? So
we've done this before in a quest.
Recruitment drive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you find the spell book and you look around the basement, you find some runes, and that allows you to use the spell to teleport to the Grand Exchange. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was not intended, but you hide from your mom, who's there and just leaving. And then you access Evil Dave's bank, and you get some more runes, and in the end you're able to teleport to the Makeover Mage, who believes you are you and not Evil Dave at some point, and changes you into a woman
with the beard.
With the beard.
and this is how, this is what we were talking about regarding the Goblin Quest. That is how you reminded the Makeover Mage of who you actually were. You mentioned what happened in that one quest.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't even think it's a requirement, is it?
No,
or is that
it's not.
For Evil Dave's part of the quest?
I don't think it is. Recipe for disaster freeing Evil Dave, just cook's assistant and the cook's part of recipe for disaster, Gertrude's cat, Shadow of the Storm, Demon Slayer, and the Golem. So no.
Huh.
Are all the reference quests fifth age quests, though?
I believe they are, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that would be your explanation, because this is a sixth age quest.
Interesting.
All right. So you get back inside, just in time for your mum, but you smell fresh. So Dave's mum find out that you have been outside, and by now you're double grounded, because you were grounded before because you did a ritual or something. Anyway, you have to do all the chores again, but your broom breaks, your knife breaks,
Soap
breaks, the plate breaks. So you go to the general store, you buy new stuff, you do your chores.
Not even buy, they just give you all the stuff
give you all the stuff.
As Dave is completely oblivious to the girl that likes him. As he is everything.
Yeah. So, yeah, you finish your chores, you do another sleep, and you find out that, meanwhile, your character is redoing the trainings required to become a Templar Knight. That is... you have to fight the person that cannot be defeated by any men, so you need to change your gender in the quest. Evil Dave comes up with a creative solution that has slipped from my mind right now, but
are you serious, or you just don't want to mention give him power?
No, I forgot.
He wants to get the person near death and then use a cat to make the finishing blow.
I see.
Right.
We just don't want to give the he who shall not be named any power.
The bunch of losers?
Yeah.
So anyway, he gets through all the trials in a creative way in your body and gets accepted into Templar Knights. So you wake up by then, and your mom is going to leave again. So this is your chance to get into Falador. So you do get to Falador, and after accidentally blowing up one of the White Knights,
which was an absolutely hilarious way of doing it, you take a helmet, you fill it with gunpowder, and then you make a fuse. I forget what we used to make the fuse with, and then
there was just a random note lying on the ground that was covered in oil.
Right, a random note, and you light it on fire, and you throw it at the knight, and boom, he goes.
Yeah. And you can keep the chart boots as a souvenir, right. I guess.
I just find that funny, because you end up with a guy who has, I mean, obviously been blown up or vaporized, and all that's left of him is the boots. I perhaps got too much joy out of blowing someone up like that.
Yeah. White Knights are allies, generally, so, yeah, I don't know.
Unless you're Zamorakian.
Unless you're Zamorakian, in which case you'd probably have a lot of joy out of it. Are you Zamorakian, Shane? Is that why you're...
No.
Okay. Okay.
No. All
right. Anyway, you sneak past some knights, which is really, really glitchy, because some of the knights you could just run in front of them and they won't notice you.
Yeah.
And you enter the party with...
Can I just say something about that first? This was straight out of a 2005 quest mechanic as well.
Which is what?
Running past the knights like that and having some of them glitch through, you know? And maybe if you were unlucky from your ping that you would be in a situation where they would see you when it looked like they wouldn't see you. So yeah, this is a very retro quest.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, you enter a party and there's a piece of pottery there called Sir Armic Farza. who's getting drunk. So, if you respond to his whims and give him the right alcoholic beverage he asks for, at some point he will slip something about the raid the White Knights are going to do, I think? Is that it? Is that how it went? I don't know. He reveals some information.
They reveal that they went to meet in their secret location in the the desert.
Yep.
Oh, right, in the Caribbean desert. Yeah.
It's worth noting that if you are not quick enough with your clicker on this, you will have to run through the White Knight maze and do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not great.
I didn't know that. I didn't.
Oh, you got it on the first go.
Yeah.
You did better than me. Because it's really annoying, because when you get the wrong beverage out, you can't get another beverage out.
Yep.
Oh, I just dropped the one I had and got a new one.
Yeah.
Sarah with his fast fingers.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't even going that fast. I was like, oh, okay, here we go. Do-do-do.
Anyway, you teleport back home, and once again, your mum finds out that you have been outside. So, Dave Bartholomew something? I don't
Dave,
know.
Dave, I don't know his last name, but Bartholomew, yes.
Yeah. It's triple grounded. That's not great. But, after doing your chores again, the veggies are currently more like soup. The dishes are very clean.
Did you get the reference to Brassica when you chopped the veggies for this time?
Yes.
Yes.
I forget what he said, but I do remember there being one.
Oh, you poor little things. Something to the effect of that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, your mom leaves again. And when you go back in the basement, you take a little nap. And this time you find out that your character is with Zamorak, warning Zamorak about the incoming attack of the White Knights. So, you of course want to go there and get your body back. But, you got visitors from some hell rats.
Oh.
And
just a little thing here. Let me just tell you what the exact wording was on the vegetables. As you work, you imagined little sobbing cries to Brassica Prime. I know exactly how you feel, little guys.
Yeah. So yeah, you have to look after some hell rats. Eventually, you decide you only have to take 3 of them with you. So you take 3 hell rats, and you teleport to Shanti's pass. Now you found out that Shanti has a problem with barrels, apparently.
Because they smuggle contraband in. Because they smuggle contraband in.
Because they smuggle contraband.
Which would be a reference to the quest. I forget what the name of the quest is, but the girl in the barrel.
Treasure trap.
Treasure trap. Tourist trap.
Tourist trap. There you go.
Tourist trap. There you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you have 3 hell rats, and Shanti won't let the hell rats through the gate, so you have to smuggle them through, and you do that by rolling one of them through the pass in a barrel covered in a rug. Here's one of them, you throw over the pass in a coconut.
I found that one amusing.
And the final one, you catapult over the pass using the palm tree.
At this point especially, I realized everybody and their goddamn mother knows Dave. And are good friends with Dave.
Yes.
The both of the random guards are like, oh, hi, Dave. Shanti's good friends with Dave.
Yep.
And also, I never figured this out, but could the rats actually talk, or is Dave just that insane?
I think Dave is just that insane.
Yeah, he's probably
that insane. And then we got that insanity.
I mean, they have names to them. Like, who names a hell rat Alan or Kevin?
A hell rat mommy and daddy.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, you get to the pass, and you get to the Caridian place, the Calphite Hive. You use one of the vets to sort of go in. And eventually you make your way to a secret entrance into Demonheim, which is a sinkhole. And you find Zamorak? No, Ceridomin. You find Ceridomin ready to raise, to start attacking Zamorak. Things go bad. And Zamorak lands on top of a White Knight, killing the White Knight, that's the casualty number two in this quest. Yeah. And at that point, Evil Day starts to realize this is not really a game anymore.
Yeah.
And gets.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, Dave gets scared.
It's almost like a Star Trek Q level of messing around with things before knowing what he's up to. Yeah. But unfortunately, he can't fix it.
Nope. So he dives under a table.
No. Doghouse. He dives into the literal doghouse.
Okay, that works for me. I don't know. I thought it was a table. So you have some trouble getting him from under there. But luckily, you know how to deal with Evil Bartholomew. And after using his full name, which is very effective, you get him down to the house. Eventually, you prepare the ritual again. However, just before the ritual is executed, Dave's mom runs to the basement, which ends up with you in your own body, but Evil and Dave and his mother have switched bodies.
Oh, boy.
And that's where the quest ends.
Now,
and you can still go and talk to them, and they are still switched.
And then they're still switched at the end. And
Evil Dave is still a woman.
And Evil Dave prefers to go by Big Mama. But I think Evil Dave body went back to male.
Oh, really? I didn't talk to Evil Dave after the quest.
Yeah.
You were not confused by the beard because, beard.
Pretty sure it went back to male.
But you do almost the entire quest as Evil Dave.
Yeah.
With a beard. Also, everybody recognized Evil Dave.
Yeah, it was
like the goat woman. Probably because of the beard. So
this guy's is pointless.
But that was an enjoyable quest. I thought all the dialogue from Evil Dave felt like Mott Raven, basically.
Yeah, I think that was the general sense as well.
But it was really enjoyable.
Yeah. I think he's male again. Yeah, he's male again.
Oh, you're checking right now?
Yeah, they reverted the model. They didn't change the model in the basement. That's just wanders.
Oh, so if you go into the basement, it's as it was during the quest, but otherwise, it's back to male?
If you go into the basement, it's the NPC that's always been there.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
They didn't change anything besides dialogue.
But the personalities are still swapped.
Yes, but you can also talk to Dave as if it's pre-quest.
Oh, no, that's confusing.
There's an option to talk about post, like, after the quest, and then there's talk about other, where he's basically himself.
That's going to be very confusing going forward as to whether or not we're talking about actual Dave or if we're talking about swap Dave or whatever the heck's going on.
It might be needed
that.
For like other quest lines. Is Evil Dave in any other quest?
Right. I'm fairly certain that if they use Evil Dave as a quest focus again, by that point they'll have sorted it all out.
Yeah, they'll solve that in the first 5 minutes of the next quest.
Or just leading up to it.
Yeah. Okay. You got 2 quest points, 50k magic XP, 20,000 herblore agility and cooking XP, which I was actually quite surprised with this reward for being such a straightforward quest. That's a lot of XP and 2 quest points.
It's expected from quests these days, I think, that they give higher rewards.
Yeah, I guess so, because, I mean, you do have to have completed Recipe for Disaster for this. So
mm-hmm. Right.
But, like, 50k part of it. Magic XP is quite a lot for, like, a level 30 requirement.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for a low-level player, that's a lot.
And it's not in lamp form, either.
No.
Oh, that's an interesting oversight.
Right? Because they just changed that a few weeks ago for lots of quests. Yeah.
Did they put them into lamp form or took them out of lamp form?
They put them into lamp form and added requirements to them.
Ooh.
So, I don't know. That's a very interesting thing. I didn't think of when the quest was happening, but maybe some inconsistency there when that ninja fix went out compared to when this quest was finalized. So,
also, I looked it up. His full name is David Bartholomew Karloff, which is most likely a reference to Boris Karloff.
And who is he?
He is a famous actor, most known for the famous evil laugh that is famous to horror movies. You know, the typical evil laugh. I can't emulate it even a little bit, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I think Sirion just tried to emulate it.
Ah. something like that. That the guy who's infamous for making that laugh a thing. He does it in the Thriller song too. That might be a little more known by some people. That laugh.
That's a pretty cool pop reference.
Boris Karloff. So he's been dead for a while, but he's a big wig in the horror genre.
So while we've been on that, what else do we got for cultural and pop culture references in this quest?
Oh, I actually made a list of some of these.
I know one of you guys mentioned a Game of Thrones meme before we began.
That was Yeah. So when you look in the dresser next to the bed on the main floor in Evil's house, there's a broken watch which has scratched in the back, and now my watch has ended.
Right, and that's for Game of Thrones, I think.
From Game of Thrones, yep.
Okay. You guys mentioned Clark and Kent at the Grand Exchange.
There was four of them. Clark, Kent, Kara, and Chris.
All right, and what are those references to?
Well, I can only assume that Clark and Kent come together for Superman, which is aided by the fact that the name Kara is the name of Supergirl.
Okay, all right.
I don't know what Chris is, though, which leads me to believe it's something else. But Clark and Kent seems like a really big coincidence. Clark, Kent, and Kara.
Let's see. There's also the thing that you get to keep these quest items after the quest. And if you try and plant the crystal tree seed, it says, nice try. Which, of course, how hard it is to get
I love the bit of dialogue where, at the start of the quest, Evil Dave is like, it must be great being an adventurer and never having to do any chores. And then the character's like, well, I don't know. Some of the quests feel a bit like, what was that?
That's right.
It was so good.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Obvious
reference
to One Small Favor.
Yeah.
There was another quest reference in there I totally forgot about, the sea slugs.
Yeah,
right.
Sea slugs.
Right, yep. About
there's
being
a sea
on
slug
the boat.
Reference where the sea slugs literally give up trying to control Dave in your body. Nope, can't. Dave is too insane for the sea slugs.
And there's like the reference to the old Grand Exchange fountain when you talk to one of the clerks.
Yeah, there's got to be a fountain around here somewhere. But, you know, in reality, that could have been an oversight because this quest could have been in development when that fountain was still a thing.
Maybe. Right. There's more quest references, but go on.
Yeah.
We could go on for a long while.
Yeah.
I
went to the water fountain in the Falador Castle area, Varrock Castle area to fill mine. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, we also mentioned the Temple Knights and changing into a woman there and the cat as well, which we won't belabor that point.
And one of the books in the Evil Dave's bookcase is Deliciousness is Power by Brassica Prime. Let that be said.
Yeah, I know lots of people are going to like that.
Yeah, that's the most popular one, I think. But there's also another one. That's another quest reference. Hey, Zeal, cult or friendship group? So, Hey, Zeal's cult of Hey, Zeal or something like that?
Yep. Yeah, that was actually a quest.
Yep.
I forget what we did in that quest, though. But it was consequential, wasn't it, for Wellgothic Sleeps? Yes. I think.
Yes, because you either choose to join Hazoo or you
right.
fight again.
There you go. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, I don't think there was anything else in there. I mean,
there's,
people could have.
Kenneth Otter and the Menace of the Sea Slugs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we all know sea slugs. Any other references or anything else on this quest before we move on?
I'm positive.
You know what this quest felt like to
what?
Me?
What did it feel like?
A butter quest.
Yes, absolutely. And we need more of these.
I mean, that's kind of all they've released this year. Besides the Metaphos.
Yeah, I kind of do. But, like, if you look at the Penguin one, there was, like, new graphics in there. Like, the whole, well, new graphics. I mean, they ripped off a popular pop item, I guess. But
TARDIS.
Like, that actually had, like, new stuff. Well, this quest had existing assets exclusively.
I mean, they definitely had to make a female body for a male head.
That's simple, though.
Except for that's really simple, because it was player character, kind of. I think there that was go. That's fairly straightforward, and, especially because...
And there was a glitch back when POHs came out, where anyone who used the dresser in a POH, like this very early on in construction, even if they were female, could get a mustache.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, they had cool new stuff. They had, like, this fake bank interface for, like... Dave's bang.
Yeah.
It was fairly simple, but like it was cool. Like playing as a different character, kind of cool. I think what is sort of fun, because it's an engine limitation that only the player character can display, like can look how the player actually looks. So in all the cutscenes, you as a character had to be positioned in where your body was standing. You can never have two copies of it. So like, it was really clever how they did it with the cutscenes and then switched back and forth, I think.
Yeah.
It was fun to see how they worked around the engine limitations there. But like in general, it felt like a bottle quest. That is maybe why it also wasn't really in-depth. Like, it felt more like an interactive story than an actual quest.
Yes.
Because everything was sort of laid out for you.
Right.
If you had to find things in the basement, you just found out what's clickable and click it.
Yeah, and if you skipped over the dialogue, you missed the entire point of the quest, so that goes to further the interactive story point. So
yes, so, I mean, I enjoyed it, but it's not a quest. It's not a...
Right.
It's a fun little distraction that we can get once a year in the form of a quest.
And I'm completely fine with it,
oh,
but
yeah.
Even like compared to, like things like the Gara quest last year was thematically similar, like silly wall, fourth wall breaking and that kind of stuff. But it had actual mechanics as well, also puzzles and that kind of stuff. Well, this one, not so much. So, you know, it was pretty straightforward. I think I enjoyed the Shanty Pass bit the most because that was the most challenging.
Yep.
Yeah,
it was. It took me a while to figure out to use the... coconut tree for the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, there's like a couple of things there, but like otherwise it was pretty straightforward, and I think it's okay. Like, it still took me, I don't know, half an hour to an hour to complete it.
Yep.
Because there's lots of like dialogue and fun little jokes in there to discover. It's just...
That's about the time. Hour.
But I wonder how much development time went in this, and for a year where we only got two quests outside of the Metaphors ones.
Yeah.
Expect a bit of a bigger one. Like, look at last year what we got. We got all this list. We got the whole Slisker quest line. We got the Vampire finale. Like, those are absolutely massive. And all we got was the Metaphors quests.
Which I saw even done because of the requirements.
Yeah. And then, even if you include those, you have six quests this year, of which two can be considered bottle quests. And the Manifold quests, they were really short.
They were
almost
more for
like,
story, except for Fight Club and Our Man in the North.
So like they felt more
Crocodile
like
Tears, rather.
One quest altogether, maybe. So this hasn't been a great year for quests. I'm happy we got the Evil Dave one, but it also felt like we deserve something bigger and more. So I'm hoping we're going to get that next year.
Yeah, the next one up on the agenda is Pieces of Hate for February, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's hopefully going to be a bit of a bigger one.
Oh.
But yeah, like, it's a bit disappointing to see that.
We did also have the quest for the Ark last year. I know how you feel about that, so I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, no. All the quest storylines together are actually... Like, all the arc storylines, mini-quests, that's quite a lot of stuff as well.
Unfortunately, though, This is about on par for the amount of quests we've been getting a year for the last few years.
Is it?
Yeah.
If you count six or if you count three? Or...
Count six.
Yeah, I don't count six.
Ever since...
I just can't.
Nah, it's technically six, even though a bunch were released at once, which they're probably counting it as six.
Yeah, but if you look at those four quests that came at Manifolds,
they're short, yeah. It's definitely not been a good year for quests. It's not six complete, fulfilling quests, but it's still six individual quests in the quest log.
We had seven quests last year.
Seven quests last year, seven the year before, seven the year before that, and six in 2013.
All right, so that's about on par if you consider, individual quest log entries. But
the point is we didn't get any big ones this year.
No. I mean, they could have went for that.
There were 14 in 2012.
Really? Wow. That is 15. Something.
Yeah, no, 2012 looks like it was the last big year for quests.
I wonder, month sounds sort of right for the old.
For the olden days, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
More than one a month.
Yeah. And I mean, that's fine, because back then they were developing the story of the game. And I think a new standard was set with the Six Age series that, any quest that's not a bottle quest has to be grand and epic on the order of, Nomad's Elegy or Children of Ma, that kind of level.
Okay, what if you had to pick between one bottle quest like this a month? Maybe a bit less than this, maybe a bit smaller than this, but something like this every month, or say three or four big ones a year.
I would go with the smaller quests, providing there would be one large one per year, give or take.
I would say at least two bigger ones a year.
Okay.
So two bigger ones a year, and then maybe like
three or four
to six butter quests.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
What?
Sure. That would be
how
optimal.
Long could this quest have taken to develop, is my question.
Well, it started off as a TAP project, a passion project for Mod Timbo.
I just feel like they could do two big quests a year and still have a bottle quest for each other month.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened with this. The full developer list for this is Mod Raymond. The lead design editor was Timbo. They didn't release information for graphics or QA on this, so it was just Raymond and Timbo, effectively. But like we said, it did feel like Mod Raven did do some dialogue there for this quest, obviously. So,
the evil ritual of doom.
Yeah, that is definitely something Mod Raven. So, but
looks like. There were 19 quests in 2008.
Yeah, but see, that was absolutely massive back then. So I don't know. We are perhaps a bit biased in terms of the amount of quests that we want, but I definitely think that more bottle quests would be good as long as there's also a storyline that is going to be sufficiently advanced. Because remember, we got to also finish off the gnome storyline at some point too.
Even with these bottle quests, it's something to expand the world, not just random meaningless stuff like, say, the penguin quest.
The penguin quest wasn't meaningless. The penguin quest arc is going to go on forever. That should be their outlet for pop culture.
Yeah.
So, we got the dragonkin. Storyline. We got to figure out what happened to them after we sent them back to that world after One of a Kind. We got the Elder Gods to figure out what happened there. We got to figure out what's happening with, the gods at this point, because we're coming up to a year on Sliskay's Endgame, which I know how we all felt about that quest when it came out. So,
still no replay.
Yeah, that's something that was promised for 2017, but...
I know Mott Raven is working on it, but
it's on its own time.
So
anyways, there's the monthly discussion on questing and how we want questing to go. We're going to move on right now to the first winter weekend, which is the Combat Winter Weekend, running from December 1st until December 4th. And just a bit of a recap for everyone who didn't listen to last week's show about this. You get an extra charm anytime you get charm drops, increased chance of rare drops, and enhanced Ring of Wealth. That should be fun to see. I wonder if that can increase the chance of getting a Hazelmere's Ring.
Who knows?
Combat. That would be fun to see.
I find enhanced Ring of Wealth a bit vague. Like, doesn't also apply to Luck of the Dwarves?
It should.
And, like,
at this
Luck
point.
Ring and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And what is enhanced? Does it?
It feels like this is a copy paste from last year's, and because at that time Ring of Wealth was the only thing that existed at that point. So
let's hope they didn't break it.
Yeah, fingers crossed. 50% bonus Slayer XP. Slayer VIP tickets for all Slayer assignments. 50% nice. Bonus anima in Shattered Worlds.
I might have to do some of that.
Yeah, get that ability unlocked at least. I think if you can get to level 60 or 70, I recall it taking unbuffed without this 50% XP, 3 or 4 hours to unlock the ability.
Wow.
So you can get that down a bit now.
I just want the music tracks.
Oh, okay.
Mostly.
10% cheaper instance fees, the ability to loot Mazcab raids once per day, extra training points from boss training. I'm not sure what that is.
So if you do a kill, if you have more than 10 boss kills and you are in a instance, or if you are killing with someone with less than 10 boss kills, you get so-called training points and you can use this and the more training points you get, the more rewards you get, so you get like a pet, a title, a hat, that kind of stuff.
All right.
And in this case you get two instead of one.
All right,
I think
fair enough. Also, the ability to choose your own boss slayer assignment, which of course is the Reaper tasks. So it's very good. I can imagine seeing lots of combat spots busy this weekend. Also, the ports expansion is up and running for the entire 5-week duration of winter weekends. 25 voyages a day instead of 15. 30% extra resources or trade goods from voyages. Good time to be farming those ancient bones.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Ancient bones are what I put towards bonds. Also, okay. The Fest of Aura is active. You get a 50% XP boost for 30 minutes once a day. So,
I've never
but
actually
I don't
really
need
made
the
use
XP
of it.
Boost.
Yeah, right? We're both maxed. What is it?
Yeah,
do for us?
So like, I guess I can use it on Slayer, but all Slayer spots will be taken.
Use
so
your own
I have
Slayer
to use
dungeon.
It. So I have to use it on Invention, but it doesn't work on Invention probably.
You know, that's what I was going
to
use it on.
Invention. It works on tool XP, probably, if anything.
So what I have to do is I have to take it down in a dungeon, and I don't think that works. So
why wouldn't it work?
Well, because it's an aura. You can't take things down in a dungeon.
Oh, you mean Dungeoneering Dungeon?
Yeah.
I think you can take auras.
Doesn't it get replaced with a Dungeoneering aura?
Yeah, it gets replaced with a Dungeoneering aura. Let's see.
I don't know. I don't really use auras myself.
I'm trying to see here what the Festive Aura does for Invention, but I'm not seeing any results on it here.
So yeah, no. This is not really like I would like to get this extra Slayer XP, but also it means doing combat, and I just don't feel like it. I just don't feel like it.
No. I feel like I need to get 99 Slayer and start filling out the Slayer Codex for a dungeon and just get tasks that I want to do and do them down there and be some antisocial hermit crab in my Slayer dungeon.
I haven't even touched any of that.
I started doing it and then I realized I have to find like 100-odd of them as a Master Quest Cape requirement. And I was like, nope, I'm not doing this. This is just, I'm never getting that Master Quest Cape. And then people are like, yeah, but it only takes like a couple of hours to do. I'm like, a couple of hours of combat.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding
me? I'm in that same boat with you.
Like, I don't like combat.
The dungeoneering requirement is what is really puts me off that cape.
What puts me off that cape is all the bossing.
Oh, yeah, true.
Exactly.
I'm gonna get flack for that, but I just don't like bossing.
Sorry, that's Xenon, fine. That's
if you
fine.
Actually watch.
That's fine. It's perfectly fine. Anyways, let us move on to the patch notes for this week. This week's patch notes are incredibly visual, believe it or not, which is something Jagex hasn't done for, well, I don't think they've ever done visual patch notes like this. So the first thing that they did is they made a number of changes to the ribbon, and the ribbon can now finally be resized, and it adds appropriate space between icons. I've wanted this ever since RS3 came out. How about you guys?
It messed with my preset.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Everything got shifted slightly.
Oh.
Well, no, I mean,
you can make
I haven't
better
ever
one.
Had much of a use for it. It's never bothered me. I modeled mine more or less after the default RuneScape look.
Okay.
From before RS3.
Yeah. And
but
that's
I can see how it would
well.
Be useful.
Yeah. I had it set to the default one, actually.
Yeah. So
we're not very exciting.
What
but now
I did,
have it set differently.
I set it up exactly like the RS Legacy UI. So every button that you have in the Legacy user interface down there, with the exception of, you know, the one that changes the combat styles because we don't have that anymore, and the achievement system one because I don't use that, it's basically, if you look at my ribbon now, it looks exactly like it looked before RuneScape 3. And it sits in the bottom corner there, and when you click one, it now opens that window directly on the right hand side, lower right hand side of the screen. And what I've also done with this is I've taken the chance and I have made it so that I can now have two windows up side by side, which is another thing that I've wanted to do ever since prior to RuneScape 3. And if you can tell, I'm very excited about this because, I mean, who has not wanted to have their inventory or skills up and have their friends list up right next to it, right? So,
I have my social stuff in the top left corner of my screen.
Okay.
Actually.
Previously, before this, I put it on the lower left next to the chat window. So,
I've got my chat window on the bottom left, inventory bottom right, and everything else in between.
Okay.
Except for my mini map, which is top right where it should be.
Yeah, that's right. So
I have things in my corners, but only in my right side is sort of filled because it has an extra. So it has an extra ability bar, an upright one, which I use for dungeoneering stuff because dungeoneering has like all these easy shortcuts. And yeah, I have them open there and have some things like surge and freedom on there so I can always access them. So I was like, okay, what would be nice is if I could put the menu bar sort of next to my action bar and sort of have like a horizontal, no, vertical, actually, vertical bar to the right of my screen. Turns out you cannot make the ribbon small enough to be equally what. Wide as the action bar, so it looks horrendous, and I could not do it.
Yeah, and see, that's something that will be fine to many people, but that grossly annoys me as well with this. And I think the only logical solution for this is to make the action bar a resizable window, just like the ribbon has been made.
I mean, you can sort of resize it, like you can make it half width, but you can't really resize it. And I get why, because there's so much info in there they have to put in there. But
and some of it is largely fixed as well.
It's like, the point is, this wouldn't be an issue if they used UX standards. Like, all the windows have like different dimensions and sizes. Like, there's no strategy in the UI, and that bothers me so much. Like, everything seems sort of whipped together, and that means you can't really make good, nice interfaces.
Yep. And for anyone wondering,
and that is what they have to fix, not these tiny things. They have to come up with a UI strategy.
Yeah.
If it was up to me, they would completely throw away NIS, and replace it. Build something new. Build a system that actually works, that also sort of works between different screen sizes. Because when I sometimes I want to quickly check my dailies on my laptop, And then I go back to my workstation, like my desktop, and I have to do the entire interface. Or I have to load from a preset, but even that doesn't always work. So,
right.
You know, the whole inventory system is just a mess.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that.
But I like changes to the ribbon.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though, they're not very intuitive, sometimes, I think, either, the changes.
Yeah. What's really neat about this is if you go into the ribbon setup window, it'll say ribbon bar displays up to 30 icons in its current size, and that number changes dynamically based on how big your ribbon is. And there's a little bit of a gray outline that'll show exactly what will be shown on the ribbon and what won't be shown on the ribbon.
That's pretty cool.
So that's a nice touch. And, you know, this ribbon can be resized any which way you want. It can be vertical. It can take up, you know, a quarter of your screen, depending on whatever you want to do with it. So there is really lots of freedom with this. But like Sirion said here, it is kind of awkward still. And that just kind of extends to the entirety of the RuneScape interface system. And we know the reason they did this is, of course, for RS Mobile. Which, whether or not these are going to be movable and resizable on mobile, that's going to be another interesting question for this as well.
So looking at the UI, like the mobile UI, it's a completely different system. It's a completely different UI system.
Yeah.
So give us a new UI system on desktop as well, and I'm happy. But don't do what they do right now. If I look at other games, I think World of Warcraft has a whole bunch of customization they can do. Like you can have lots of bars and that kind of stuff. But I think if you look at, for example, Guild Wars 2, that's a fixed interface. You just have what you have on the screen, and you can open a dialogue that has different tabs that is like your inventory and your stuff. Like it has a few windows. That's it.
Do you think we need to go back to that?
Yeah. But we can't, because we now have this, and we have the option to use the ARS Legacy inventory interface mode, and then you can use the Legacy interface mode using the RS3 skin, or you can use the NIS using the Legacy skin, because we need all the options, apparently. Because that's how RuneScape works these days. Imagine coming in as a new player.
Yeah.
It
does lead to a bunch of headaches.
I cringe every time they add a new toggle.
Yeah, and I'm going to read something here to you, and I'm just going to jump ahead a bit in the ribbon patch notes here. But I'm going to read this to you, and I want to know what you think about it. Alongside these changes, we're also running tests on the tutorial. Half of new players will get the existing tutorial unchanged, while the other half will start with only the settings button on the ribbon, with the inventory, skills, and war and equipment windows opened as their first scene. These players will also have the default set of buttons activated after the tutorial, where we hope to see players have a less confusing experience, and as a result, fewer players dropping out.
So what I recommend you doing is open old school RuneScape and do the tutorial. This is exactly what they do.
What if you just use the legacy UI? Because that doesn't fit. That doesn't move around.
That doesn't move. But that's what it does. It unlocks icons one by one, depending on how you unlock them.
Yeah, something definitely needs to be done with this, because, I mean, if we're at the point where 50% of people doing a tutorial are getting one form of interface and the others are getting what we have now. Yeah, it's an experiment. Right. It's an A-B test on real people. I don't know if that's an ethical thing to do for this.
Well, I think we're past the point of being ethical. They just need to fix their UI system. But the fact that the whole UI system is confusing, and I don't know the edit mode. There is so much going on in the edit mode.
There is.
I played RuneScape for 10 plus years, and I have no idea what half the windows are.
There's not even enough room on this my screen, which is fairly large, to fit all these different things.
And they're all overlapping.
Why, why must it, I be able to change all these things?
Because they wanted customization.
It's, you know why? Because all these windows are implemented as they are, like, in the spot, instead of having a standardized interface system that multiple systems can hook into. That's why. It's because the whole UI interface is not designed properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have like a mini game interface.
And the mini game interface also includes the icons that show the current voice of Saren if you're in Prif.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
So, you know, they need a build
a simple, standardized
system where they can tie into new stuff. And they need to make it sensible, and they might have some options, but it should all tie into the same thing, so you don't have to change everything individually anymore.
I completely agree with you, and I'm just going to say, this leads me to one very favorite thing about using a Mac, at least back in the olden days, is that if you go back to 2005, 2006 in Mac OS 10.4, it was a very precise system, and if you wanted to change a setting or interact with something, there was one very specific way to do it and only one way to do it. That is the right way to do settings.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, they have also added the ability to add a couple of different icons to the ribbon, magic abilities, combat spells, teleport spells, skilling spells, attack, strength, defense, and constitution abilities, and the emote button, which previously was something that really couldn't be hidden, and you know, you could just drag it out. So
they added the ability to hide it a while ago, though, didn't they?
No, I think things like the extra screen were always there.
Yeah, it was like a chat UI, so you couldn't remove it.
Well, no, I think they actually, it was for the longest time it was that way, but I think they ended up adding a way to remove it after a while. I don't think that's a new development.
And see, if you ask me right now how to remove that window, I couldn't tell you because it's too complicated.
Unlock your screen and press X on it.
Well, I mean, prior to today.
You could do that before.
Really?
Just originally, for the longest time, that wasn't the case.
Okay. Well,
but there are still windows that are unremovable.
Yeah, that's news to
me. In the house settings in your POH. That's unremovable.
Gosh, that's annoying. Right. All right, adding future windows to the ribbon now requires significantly less work, and they have added buttons on the ribbon setup UI so you can reset your ribbon to the default icons or remove everything in one go, and icons added to the bar are now removed from the selection area, which I think makes 100% sense. So they also added a bunch of icons on the escape menu where you can access the main menus, hero, customization, adventures, powers, and I'm guessing that other one is achievements, I think. Oh, that's all available via the escape menu now. They've also added...
I like the new escape menu.
Yes, the new escape menu is good because that way then you don't need to have all these up here. And then you can just go into the escape menu and pull one of these if you don't have it on your ribbon. So that's good. Continuing on the same vein here, they have two magic ability windows now. And the main one has been renamed to the magic book. That'll include everything like the magic abilities, the magic combat spells, the teleport spells, and the skill spells. And the... magic abilities is just as we had it before for EOC. So that, I don't know if this is less confusing or more confusing now, but anyways, melee and attack abilities now have separate icons. Melee uses cross swords. The war and equipments icon has been changed to distinguish from the hero icon, which is good. And the drawer,
but it's confusing.
Yes, yeah, it is. The drawer icon has been replaced with a settings cog to make more room. So, I think in general, we got a mixed bag here. I mean, some of these fixes are really great, and some of them just add to the confusion of the RuneScape user interface system. So.
I think overall's a net win, but this is trying to fix a tiny thing while the entire thing is just broken.
Yeah, it's just putting some glue on it. So.
You hit a duct tape.
Okay, that's a better analogy. Thank you. Optimizations. We've been using some new tools to track scripts that are running in the client in certain situations, and using these, we've been able to identify unnecessary and or expensive code and investigating what these scripts are doing and optimizing them where we can. So these changes include scripts to the bank, including client-side spoofing, which now tries to predict what will happen and helps make the bank seem more responsive. When spam clicking to withdraw multiple items, this could get out of sync and cause a well-known tab flickering bug. Changes have been made to reduce the likelihood of this occurring.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
Yeah, I mean, you see the tab and it's you can clearly see that the tabs are a glued together system for the bank, which is something else that hopefully we'll see in 2018. The way the icons are built when the bank is loaded has been changed. This means that items should no longer pop in when scrolling through. That's odd because every time I've opened the bank this week, I've seen icons dynamically generated and appear there. So,
maybe you're being A/B tested on.
Oh, maybe. I hope not. The efficiency of individual scripts has been generally improved, and a measure has been put in place to stop the interface from repositioning everything when no changes have been made to the inventory. Not sure what that one means, but okay.
Maybe they should have put a screenshot in for that as well.
Yeah, that would have been good. Some general improvements here. In historical cases, especially upon first login, window positioning may have occurred several times. This should now only happen once.
Yeah, these are the kinds of bugs you really find really easily as soon as you start profiling.
Yeah, I mean, you got to wonder why this wasn't done as part of a general test of the UI system when RS3 came out.
This makes me think of DOM reflows in web development. Those are evil.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you got tons of little fun scripts moving stuff around. By deleting permanent interface components and only building them when they're required, almost 1,000 components no longer use memory constantly.
Also, why are there 1,000 components in the first place if there was a standardized thing, you know? never mind. Go on.
Now, here's one. Several scripts run every client frame, and for purposes such as controlling animation. So every time you have a frame running in RS, a script is running. These run in the background, even when you're doing nothing, and they've made several changes. Overall, we've reduced the runtime for these passive scripts by almost 95%. Global transparency was also using these scripts and accounted for a large portion of this. We've changed the way it's implemented, but unfortunately it means that we can no longer use the current setting, so all transparency will be set to the 50% default on login. In case anyone's wondering why that changed this week.
Yeah.
Fine. Like, have a default. That's fine. Like,
yeah. Several features such as loading screens now stop running these scripts when turned off. Okay. So if you had loading screens turned off, the scripts would still be running. Huh. And bugs have been fixed, which allowed for some of these scripts to keep running after they were meant to be finished.
It is really funny reading these optimization bugs, because for a lot of these things, I can imagine how they happened. I can imagine how they were sort of not optimized at that point, and I can sort of see how it all works together, and it brings up memories. It brings up memories. But these are the things that should have been fixed at NXT client release, because that was also the point where you could really drive adaption, and a lot of people didn't use NXT back in the day because it just didn't work for them. I'm pretty sure that if people would now boot up the NXT client, it would work a lot better, especially after these changes.
I agree.
So for all you Java users out there, download the NXT client and try it out because it might be a lot better now.
It's interesting you say that because I said this exact same thing on last week's show.
Good.
So we are repeating this. So we are on the we are sending a consistent message here. That's great. A couple more regarding load screens. After detecting that the game is loading, there is now a half-second pause before triggering a loading screen, avoiding unnecessary screens such as when going through doors in Barrows.
Has either of you have the loading screen still turned on?
Nope.
I don't even know. Probably not.
The problem is they actually glitch. I disabled them when I did Farago because when you enter the Farago lair, you might get stuck on the loading screen while you're in the encounter.
Oh.
Yeah.
The loading screen now has a disable button, saving new players from having to locate it in the settings menu.
Actually, it's a voluntary loading screen, not a really weird concept in the first place.
Right?
Voluntary loading.
Just realize this. Why can't we turn off loading screens in the first place?
Aren't loading screens designed for a purpose, not for cosmetic?
Yes. They're generally there because the game world does not exist in the background.
Right.
I just... No. Yeah, okay. Move along.
All right. Unstable Essence has become slightly more stable. For example, it will now show as rune crafting in the Make-X interface rather than cooking.
Okay.
And it's no longer possible to summon pets inside the Dungeoneering grouping areas. So, yeah. All right. Oh, boy. Anyways, continuing on with this... completing one of a kind now shows the correct task completion message. I don't know what it would have shown before, but okay. Perfect dragon scales for Vinaka's Slayer challenge no longer try and drop on non-members' worlds. A large number of... Yeah, I don't know. A large number of optimizations have been made to the top-level interface, which we kind of just talked about. But... they're there. Various optimizations for the bank interface, already mentioned in the patch notes. And members can now remove the extras icon on the ribbon interface, which is something we've been waiting for a long, long time.
You know what sort of bothers me?
What's that?
The first word of that sentence.
Members.
Oh. Key point. Good eye there. Because, I mean, obviously, for free-to-play, that means then that's the way that people are forced to subscribe to the game, is if they see this extras icon and they can purchase membership there.
I mean, there's the extras icon. There's, like, the bazillion things on the world map. There's the bazillion things on the home teleport map.
There's even a subscribe button on the top left of the screen.
There's a subscribe button you can't get rid of, but you can move it around in your interface if you want to. It's... okay. We've ranted about this before. Just
Yeah. We don't need to stress Sirion out any more than he already is.
I'm fine.
All right. Next up, the Winter Sweepstake, which is apparently had the URL change. Okay, so you can win a gaming laptop this Christmas. It's a Razer Blade Pro, and all you need to do is enter your details here on their Facebook page for a chance to win. And they say you don't even need a Facebook account to enter.
Okay, you don't need a Facebook account, but you have to deal with a screen filling thing from Facebook asking if you really don't want to log in, and if you dismiss that, it will still take up like a third of your screen in the bottom. I hate Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't even bother with most Facebook related things like this.
And that's a very smart thing to do. You also get two additional entries for each of your friends who enter. So the more people you invite to enter this competition, the more entries you get with it. So
referral.
Yeah, it's a referral pyramid scheme. I'm sorry, not a scheme, because you don't need to pay anything for this. Jagex is completely honest with this. So you just go there, enter your information, and you might have a chance to win. And no, not now. We don't want to log in. So
told you.
Yep. All right. Final piece of RS news this week is the advent calendar, which starts up on December 1st. So
which would be reset, wouldn't it?
Yeah, reset in just a couple hours from recording time here. Runs through the 25th. So there will be a different promotion on Treasure Hunter each day. Plus, you get to open your advent calendar for a gift. And you can find the advent.
See that coming.
Yeah, no, I mean, interesting. The advent calendar is nicely tied in with the Treasure Hunter promotions, right? Advent calendar can be found on the community interface, and the prize is related to what's on Treasure Hunter for the day. And you can collect the prizes on the advent calendar up until January 9th. So you don't need to log in every day to get the Advent prize, but if you want to take advantage of Treasure Hunter, you do need to log in for that. So
having to log in every day during this period, given the Christmas period, family visits, would be a bit of a nasty move.
Well, they usually let it run a few extra days past the holidays, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, yeah. We have had these things where you have to log in every day to get the reward or buy Bunt.
Right.
So it's good they're doing it this way. It's good they're doing it this way. And there's also new Christmas rares, which you can get through Christmas Pinatas, which will be available on December 1st and then throughout the 1st to the 25th. And these are going to include new rare items, including the Christmas present sack, elf shoes, the Christmas tree cape, the Rudolph necklace, the wreath shield, the Christmas present helmet, present hammers, the stocking teleport, Tony the Snowman, and a stack of presents. See, I thought these were going to be part of the advent calendar, but it turns out they're actually rares based on this. So,
I wonder if they're tradable.
Are they just trying to recreate more rares for people to blow all their money on?
You know, I think that these are going to come through in the way of tokens like we had with the beach. That would be my guess. I don't think they're going to do any rares like the Christmas tree hat or the Black Santa of years past, though they could. But, I mean, there's certainly a lot of them here, and there's going to be lots of chances to get them, especially over 25 days, that I don't think they're going to be as rare as those items that are out there right now.
I'm a bit sad that they used up the image quota in the patch notes because I would have liked to see how they look.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been good. But, you know, if you want to see how they look, you can go back to the content showcase from last week where they actually showed all these off there. They did show them off there.
Okay.
Nobody got time for that.
Yeah, well, for those of you guys who don't have time for that, I did feature that content showcase on the podcast, and I did include some of that on the YouTube version of it, and you can find links to that at update.rsbaby.com.
Nice plug.
There's that option as well. So, anyways, that's it for RS news this week. Anything else before we move on to our discussion topic of Zivik?
Nope.
All right, so this one is from Zant. Hey guys, so I've been playing RuneScape very sparingly since about late 2013, and until recently holiday travels resulted in me listening to several episodes of RSBNB Update in the car during my travels. Unfortunately, this may have resulted in...
Ultimately.
Oh, oops. Ultimately. That's a big difference than unfortunately there.
Yep.
Ultimately, this may have resulted in my return to the game. My question for you all is, what new content over the past year or two do you think has made a positive impact on the day-to-day way that you play RuneScape, aside from the obvious stuff such as NXT? This can be larger updates or even smaller quality of life fixes that you think are good for a returning player to know about. There have been a lot of content updates that I've missed out on during my break, and I'm trying my best to catch up and stay in the know about what's good to try out as far as new content. Also, are any of you tea drinkers? If so, what is your favorite tea? I'm thrilled to be playing RS again, and RSBNB has always made me feel welcome as part of the community. All the best from Zant. Thank you, Zant.
Well, I'll just straight up say I don't drink tea while I try to think of an update. So you two can...
Yeah, let's answer the tea one first. Obligatory reference to tea, Earl Grey hot, even though I'm not a fan of Earl Grey. But I do have a collection of teas here. Most of them are herbal, some of them rooibos teas. I can't tell you where to get them because they come from a Canadian store that I don't believe you guys have in the US, but I'll describe my favorite one to you. It's kind of got a caramely flavor to it, almost like a kind of a coffee sense, but it still tastes like a tea when you drink it. So if that gives you any sense of what it is.
I'm more of a coffee. I'm addicted to coffee. So,
and you're the one person here that lives in the UK.
I do drink tea sometimes. I usually can't be bothered making it, but I do drink tea. Usually when I'm at work, I drink green tea with honey. I really like that. But when I'm home, especially during the winter and autumn months, I really like cinnamony teas.
Oh, I have some of those for you.
Yeah, so my teas come from the Netherlands, and we like our sweet stuff. So our teas are pretty sweet from the get-go.
But so
like,
cinnamon, right?
Apple cinnamon, Turkish tea. We have Turkish apple tea as well.
I've been looking for something apple cinnamon based.
Yeah, I have three apple cinnamon based things. I have apple pie tea because apparently that's a thing. But yeah, and there's also something that is called the Dutch Grey or Dutch Tea Blend, which is a very sort of neutral taste in general, but it has a hint of like orange, which gives it a freshness, which is really nice. So those are like my favorites.
Is that orange? Delicious.
You know, you're describing the teas that I haven't been able... What?
Sarah just put a reference to the quest.
Oh. In
there. Because the stew had a hint of orange.
Oh! That's not oh, congratulations, Sira.
You might have just given us the show title.
I need to get some of those teas. I've been looking for exactly what you have described.
Yeah, no, I don't. So when I'm in the shop here in England, there's just tea generally. There's not a lot of options. But in the Netherlands, there is so much tea. So much. Like, from like fruit teas to green teas, herbal teas. It's ridiculous. Like, I would expect that here in the UK, but it's actually kind of boring.
So, yeah, they basically probably just got Earl Grey and like an English breakfast or something, right?
Yeah, that's generally what you get. And like some green teas, but, like not like fruit teas, you have to go to like a specialty store.
All right, well, I know what I'm doing if I ever meet up with you.
I might have to make sure I have some extra. But yeah, about the updates. I mean, the ninja updates, I think, make the biggest impact in a day-to-day life. But yeah, it's so hard to pick them out because they are sort of ninja updates. They go in there, they change something, and within like a day, you're used to how it works now.
I'm going to highlight two very key ninja fixes that have happened in the last 2 years, and they have been on Ninja Week updates, and we have talked about those specific updates on the show, and they made that week. Number one is the ability to fill your runecrafting essence pouches directly from the bank without needing to extract essence and do it that way. You just right-click on the pouch and choose fill. That's number one. Number two is also the combined interface on the bank when you have a Beast of Burden out. You can withdraw directly to the Beast of Burden either by choosing Withdraw to Beast of Burden, and you'll see it appear on the right-hand side, or you can click that Beast of Burden tab and drag from your bank into the Beast of Burden.
Okay.
Yeah, those are really good ones. I agree.
For day-to-day stuff, I got nothing. I was looking through the last 2 years' updates. So there's just nothing for me that's day-to-day. Updates that helped me out for briefly day-to-day were probably the Memorial to Guthix got me through Divination.
Oh, that's a really good one to look into, yeah.
That's actually a really good update for this year, and it was the first surprise update of 2017.
And then there was the runecrafting update, which didn't really help me, but it thought it would help me. And
what did it do?
Ultimate, the big rune span update, I should say. When they update a rune span, where they added more rewards and the unstable essence.
All right.
That almost that was almost helpful, but in reality, it just motivated me, so it didn't actually change anything.
Okay.
I mean, of course you want access to Pythinus these days, because that's where things happen.
But that's not the last 2 years, is it? I guess it would be.
That'd be 14.
Did it come out in 2014?
Yep.
Ay, ay, ay.
On that same vein of runes, they made all the runes a lot more valuable, not only with the Vizwax machine and the rune and the runecrafting guild, but also by removing drops of fire runes from fire giants, for example. So if you look at the value of a fire rune right now, fire runes are currently valued at 97 GP each.
They used to be like one or two at one point.
Nature runes are currently 450 GP each. And combined with this, they have made traditional runecrafting a form of money-making and decent XP if you use the Abyss. By using the Abyssal Skull, which you can purchase for 550k, and it just automatically skulls you when you go into the wilderness, but it gives you double XP on your runecrafting to the Abyss.
Jeez.
So, there's that. Now, as much as people don't like Menaphos because of the grind regarding the reputation around it, the Menaphos quests, and specifically the final quest Fight Club, unlock the Soul Altar. And Soul Runecrafting is almost as AFK as Runespan, and it's more rewarding, and it's not as it doesn't feel like a guilty pleasure, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
And that's what I did last bonus XP weekend, is I did Soul Runecrafting. And I got from level 93 to 98.
You put some real soul into that weekend.
I don't get it.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Soul. I don't get it. Put some soul into that weekend because you did soul runes.
I don't get it.
Okay.
Let's see. I mean, we could talk about things that have been that were released but weren't right on first go but have been since updated to be interesting gameplay. I am specifically talking about three updates here. I'm talking about the Ark.
That's good XP. That's really good XP.
Good XP. Yeah. You ready for the next one? Shattered Worlds.
Eh. Eh.
Don't bother.
You got two combat dislikers here.
I mean, it's better than it was at release.
It was, but is it worth it? You get an ability out of it. Well,
the ability is all that's worth it at this time, but it's an interesting concept to play around with for an hour or so.
Should have had skilling.
It should have, definitely. And the third one? The achievement system.
Oh
yeah, I forgot about that.
That took a while to get right.
It's still not right, though.
It's better than it was.
I remember.
Yes, because it could not be worse. I remember they could have not made it worse.
The last time I was on is what we were talking about this. We were talking about the achievement system.
Oh, boy. I remember.
Of course, I always talk about the achievement system.
Well, one of the things we were talking about.
There's so much potential, and they completely messed it up.
One of the things we were talking about was that they could or should, I don't remember, add an achievement score system.
They did.
Did I mention that?
And they ended up doing it. I don't know. Somebody here suggested it.
Probably I can't Sarah. Believe I suggested that.
It may have been me.
Especially because they now require you to do the dumbest things to get that score.
It may have been me because I may have referenced Xbox Live system.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I remember something like that.
Actually, no, I think it was something they were looking at to begin with.
What did you do?
Hey, come on. I don't have that much influence.
Now here's a big one. Invention came out in 2016, but it wasn't really complete until Invention Batch 2 came out this past September.
Oh, yeah. Machines are really good.
So
I haven't touched them.
Invention is a really fleshed out skill at this point, I feel.
Yep.
Those are the big ones that come up to mind for me. And you know, they have started diversifying skilling. Another example is crystal skill chompas. If you want to have an ability to make money with Hunter, there you go. So, mobile's coming out. I don't know where else to go with this. But those are the updates I would suggest at this point that stand out to me. You guys have any other ones?
Not really, no.
Nope.
Tannis always talks a lot about this one and really likes it. Skyboxes and filters, because that was marketed as a cosmetic update for video makers, but in reality it is one of the best accessibility updates that Jagex has ever shipped. Because of the ability to invert colors or make the game grayscale.
Yeah.
So.
I remember I was there for that conversation too.
Yep. You were around for a lot of the important things this year.
I've been on the show twice. This is my third time this year.
Well, I guess we've chosen very important updates for you then. So. All right. Anything else with that question, or are we good?
I'm good.
Okie dokes, then. If you guys want to send in your questions for next week, email questions@rsbnb.com or call or text 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. You can also leave us a DM on Twitter at rsbnb. So moving into tech news right now, this next story here was provided by Sirion regarding another discussion on lockboxes and the video game industry and where it might be going that could be a bit nefarious. So tell us what you got.
Yeah, so I think most people on the podcast will be aware of what happened with Star Wars Battlefront 2, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
We had a good discussion about that.
Yeah, loot boxes, people don't really like them, and the outrage has reached a point where politicians have shown interest in what this is all about and how this fits in with the gambling laws, because loot crates do not currently fall under gambling laws because you always get something. It's not gambling, basically. It's random chance, but it's not gambling in the legal sense. But especially, I think in Belgium, they want to have a big investigation into this.
Yeah, and Belgium, I've been hearing a lot that they're really looking into it.
Yeah. That's that. And after the outrage, game companies were sort of like, this could not end well. So they came up with this idea called the NCGP, because every important thing has to have like
an alphabet game. Soup.
National Committee for Games Policy.
Yes. Now that sounds really important. So what does it do? Well, it's a it's not an association of game developers. It's a coalition of high level industry experts and influencers.
With lots of money.
They will get lots of money, but they will not accept government sponsorship. They will work on behalf of games industry professionals of all political leanings. So they have a steering committee, and they have a think tank, if I understand correctly. And they are sort of supposed to solve this issue. And you think, this is great. This sounds good. The games industry has finally realized that they were wrong. They are maturing and they're going to solve this. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at
it is... But we know which way it's going to go.
That there are some politicians who are starting to be worried about this whole loot crate gambling thing and want to put regulation on it. Regulation on things is very likely to be bad for the game developers because they have to work within regulations. So what they're trying to do here, most likely, is they try to come up with a premise that they can self-regulate and there's no need for a formal regulation so that they can basically set their own boundaries. Of course, a developer like EA, there's no legal right from this NCGP to police that. So it has to be self-regulating. And right. If the politicians are happy that they can do that, they won't have to put laws on it, which makes game developers happier. In practice, this company is going to have a lot of money, and I think we all know where that money is going to end up in the end.
Yep. It's going to end up in the pockets of the politicians and the people who can get the right opinions are going to get this money, and they will do what this NCGP wants them to do.
So somebody made the link with the tobacco industry, which is a pretty big deal, but you can imagine, like, when it got out that tobacco and, like, the nicotine and all the things were actually really bad for the body, and that the way that was advertised was not entirely honest from the tobacco companies, the government should have put their, like, put their hands down and say, like, stop selling this stuff, it's poison. But instead you get this tobacco industry sort of promising to self-regulate and making sure that this is right, and that's why tobacco is still being sold as it is. And like, there's probably multiple examples, and we have to realize there's so much money that's involved in microtransactions in games these days.
Yeah.
Any regulation that limits that is a huge hit to all game developers.
Yeah, and that's
so
why
they are wildly advantage, like they have like a huge interest in not getting those regulations out. The point is, the question is, are we already past the turning point? Is there still a chance that they can go back and say, now you have the self-regulation body, it's fine? Or will politicians actually step in, put the regulations down, or will we actually see a huge lobbying effort being started from the game companies to keep these laws open and free so that the money can roll in?
You know,
lobbyists are definitely going to be a thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They are going to be a thing, but I don't think it's going to reach a critical mass issue unless it comes to the United States.
You know, I'm sad that the games industry is in this state.
Yep. It's almost like a race to the bottom, right?
Yeah. Like over the longest period, the games industry was very revolutionary, right? It was forward thinking. It was the first to work with online distribution a lot. It was the first to, like, they're always really forward thinking and sort of pushing the borders and like other more traditional things like music and movies and even things like text and news have sort of trotted behind. But now the games industry has sort of lost that spark, that touch, that newness, and they have come to this point where it's these big companies again just trying to push the most money out of the customer. And I'm sort of sad that the games industry has lost that touch. Like, maybe I'm imagining.
No, I'm going to agree with you on
that. It feels, especially the last few years, a lot of games companies have just... They used to be nice people, and now they're just out for, like, the most money.
It doesn't feel like there's anything innovative happening with it. And that leads us to this point.
I mean, nothing's changed in EA, but other companies, yes.
I'm not going to say EA was like Angelic a couple of years ago. They've always been out for, like, they've always been a big company that wants the money. But, like, if I feel it's sort of seeping over the entire games industry, and that makes me a bit sad.
Yeah.
Because the industry, like, the market is completely flooded by indie, and I make air quotes here, indie games these days. But that's also, being really lucky is how you succeed there. Really, really lucky. But there's also really bad things happening in the indie scene. Like, there is a huge market on Steam, for example, for, like, these trading cards. There's companies that thrive by ripping assets out of another game, putting them into a new game that does basically nothing, just so they can put trading cards on it and then make a marginal profits on the trading on those trading cards.
Yeah, that's really bad. Yeah. And, like, you know, from that perspective, it's a broken industry.
The industry is currently... Yeah, it's currently broken. Like, you have these big companies that have nothing... Like, have nothing but money at their heart. You have these indies who are really passionate and want to put out their innovative ideas out, but they can't because of the flood of these malicious games, bad games. And like, there is a middle ground. There are these semi-large companies and publishers that do pretty well. They sort of sit in the middle. Frontier comes to mind. That's a pretty decent consumer-minded company. And there's a couple more, but they are relatively uncommon in the current scene. And I think we're going to see some shifts in the next year or so. I hope, at least, because right now the games industry is sort of driving to a huge cliff at really
it's not
speed.
Sustainable. And I mean, if this lobby group here was to, you know, gain power in Belgium and the EU and eventually the US, I mean, the video game industry would effectively become something, like you said, like the tobacco industry or the pharmaceutical agency or the gun lobby in the US.
Yeah, or the media industry.
Right.
Remember all those discussions we have about the bullshit piracy arguments they have.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of discussion we're slowly going to enter with the video games.
Yeah. And I don't think a lobbying agency is the way to stop that. That is the way to accelerate it towards mm-hmm. that direction. And, you know, it just needs
and
to...
And who is represented by this group?
Exactly. The interests
of... Are the indies
of,
represented?
The interests of the game developers are supposedly represented, but in reality, it's the profits of the game developers that are represented here.
It's the profits of the large game development companies.
Yeah.
Think innovation should come from the smaller developers.
That is exactly it right there. So I don't know. I hope this doesn't go ahead, because I hate it when groups like this corner an industry and, you know, turn that industry into a political wedge for politicians. So I hope it doesn't go this way. And we're definitely going to have to watch to see what happens in Belgium, because that seems like the front of this. And if it starts happening elsewhere, then boy, that's going to be worrying. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
I want to take us on to our next tech news story, and this one is a shocker. This week it was revealed on Tuesday evening that there was a massive security vulnerability in macOS High Sierra. Versions prior to High Sierra, so macOS Sierra 10.12 and prior, are not affected by this. And an attacker, either local or remote to your system, could gain access to a Macintosh computer if a root password had not been set. All that would have been needed would be to type the username root and hit log in or unlock on any of the system preferences panes, and voila, full access to the system.
You have to actually hit it twice. That's the little thing.
All right.
The first time you do it, it actually makes the root account, and then the second time you can log in.
Oh, I mean, it's the small things that count, right?
Yeah.
Apple has patched this early on Wednesday automatically for anyone running the affected systems. So, you know, just checking your software updates to make sure that you receive this if you're on High Sierra. But, oh boy, this is something that has never hit Mac OS before. It's never hit Windows before. And this is a huge vulnerability because not only could it be accessed locally, it could be accessed remotely if you had remote desktop or SSH login turned on for your computer. So this was really bad. And Apple's word here is that security is a top priority for every Apple product, and we regrettably we stumbled with this release of Mac OS.
Crying out loud. How many PR people were needed to write that?
When our security engineers became aware of the issue Tuesday afternoon, we immediately began working on an update that closed the security hole. This morning, as of 8 a.m. on Wednesday, the update is available for download, and starting later today, it will be automatically installed on all systems running the latest version, 10.3.1, of macOS High Sierra. We greatly regret this error, and we apologize to all Mac users both for releasing with this vulnerability and for the concern it has caused. Our customers deserve better, and we are auditing our development processes to prevent this from happening again.
Oh, yeah, that's an oversight.
So, yeah, I work at a software company. We had a bunch of fun with this.
I bet you did.
We joked around about this a lot. It's a serious issue. I mean, imagine working for a company that holds, I don't know, medical data for people. And a MacBook at the latest version is a pretty common thing to use at bigger companies, I would assume. Those companies were probably pretty worried about now. Yeah. They probably still are. This is like,
it's going to take Mac OS as being the secure option out there.
Yeah, and imagine being a big company that is about to run an end to their current contract that makes Mac their whole platform and has to renew. This might be a huge dent into their trust. So, you know, it is slightly worrying that this kind of stuff can happen. I mean, it can happen. Like, I'm, well, surprised, yes. Completely, completely saying this is impossible. No, these errors slip in. But it is still sort of worrying that an error of this gravity can happen and be shipped.
Yeah.
Especially because there are indications that this particular bug was known by Apple, or at least mentioned to Apple, at least as much as 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the exploit was...
And it's so simple to do.
And the exploit was made publicly visible without talking to Apple first, so it was immediately exploitable.
And that's not how you do this normally. So, you know, I'm trying to think of when the last time we had a big bug like this was in any major operating system. And the only thing I can think of that is this large is the Messenger vulnerability back in Windows XP, when Windows XP systems were getting spammed by bots on the internet using the Messenger command because Microsoft had left that port and service on. But even then, that wasn't malicious. And if you wanted a malicious option, it would also be back in the early days of XP when Windows XP was getting constantly attacked by worms on the internet.
There was the huge SSH one, right? Heartbleed. That was pretty big.
Right, but that was mainly in server side, though.
That was OpenSSL, yeah. Still, like, that's... Yeah. I don't know. Client-side bugs don't really come in a lot, do they?
No, and we have to be really thankful for that, because how many people use Mac OS on a day-to-day, you know, life, and how many of these people are going to be potentially vulnerable from this.
Wasn't it possible with like one of the recent iOS versions to get around the lock screen by entering the camera and then sort of...
Yeah, that was, I believe that was back in iOS 10 when they added the swipe right for camera and then access to camera roll.
Yeah.
But even then, that was fixed real quick too, and you weren't given full root system privilege again.
True.
Whereas this was, you know, root system privilege, where if you're running as root user, for anyone who doesn't use a Unix system out there, which basically means is that you are God mode and you have the ability to do anything you want on that system, and you could wipe out that file system. So pretty
and
big.
All the trade secrets on the laptop.
Yep. Oh. Anyways, basically, if you're running a Mac, make sure you run the most recent software updates and ensure that you have received what they're calling Apple Security Update 2017-001.
You can also prevent yourself from being vulnerable by this update by setting a root password.
Right.
Manually.
Yeah. Which is an interesting endeavor. And most Mac users won't use that or won't do that. No. All right.
So just update.
Yeah, after this, until this update. That's right. Moving on to our final piece of tech news. Bitcoin has gone past $10,000, past $11,000, falling once again to just around $10,800. So for anyone who has been living under the rock for the last number of years, Bitcoin is what is referred to as a cryptocurrency that is mined on the internet by high-powered computers, and people who mine them reap the benefits of it, of having these bitcoins. And then those bitcoins can be exchanged for real-world currencies. Though at this point, when you mine bitcoins, you're getting fractions of bitcoins, not full bitcoins. It's a very expensive process to do. It requires lots of energy and lots of high-powered floating computers. Point operations, effectively graphic cards. So basically,
that is why they're currently experimenting with replacing ads on websites with JavaScript that use your processing power to mine a bit of Bitcoin. And basically, you pay for use of websites, not to seeing ads, but by your energy bill.
Yeah, huh. Which is a really interesting thing when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting ploy. And yeah, I mean, some people don't like it, but that's an ethical issue for another day. The current concern, though, with Bitcoin is that this is a rocket going up and eventually it's going to come crashing down really, really hard. Quoting from CNBC here, it says that parabolic rallies are inherently unstable, which basically means they go up and then come down really quickly. And otherwise, Bitcoin's value would ultimately surpass all the wealth of the world within a few years. So it is not sustainable to have Bitcoin keep rising at this rate. And I think basically what the word of advice needs to be here is probably if you have Bitcoins now might be a good time to exchange them at this high price.
So I think Bitcoin has value. And the only reason it has value is because of its potential value it can have in the future.
That's right.
The only reason Bitcoin has a value is because people expect that Bitcoin will be an actual properly used currency in the future. It's used somewhere in some places right now, but the acceptance is really, really low.
Yeah, I think China uses it. There's a lot of Chinese retailers that use it.
Well, China's banned something. They banned something along those lines recently. I don't know if they banned blockchain or...
They would want to ban blockchain in China because blockchain prevents censorship. And we know what the Great Firewall of China does. Yeah. And we've talked about blockchain technology before on the podcast. It's basically a database, a central database that has a cryptographic signature. It can be written to once and it cannot be changed, because if it were to be changed, that would violate that signature and it just wouldn't work anymore. And that's the beauty of it. And I think what Sirion here, I think what you're getting to is that Bitcoin itself might not have value in the future, but the blockchain technology behind it is incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm. But so. But like to get back to like the Bitcoin value, right now it's worth 10,000 something dollars per Bitcoin. That value, people only have Bitcoin in the hope that it gets worth something more in the future. The problem is, at some point, it has to actually get value by being accepted in your online web store or in your supermarket.
Yeah.
If that doesn't happen, then
it's worthless.
At some point,
it's going to come crashing down, right?
People are going to stop trusting that Bitcoin is going to become a thing. What they do is they're going to start dumping their Bitcoins. That means higher supply, lower demand. That will bring up like a chain reaction, and all of a sudden it comes all crashing down. There's two scenarios for Bitcoin. One of them is it starts being accepted as a main currency in a lot of things. If something like Amazon started accepting it, it will stay. Like, it will most likely stay. Or that won't happen, and at some point the bubble will burst and Bitcoin will be worthless. And we will have a lot of people losing money at that point.
Yeah, especially all the people who have bought hardware to invest in the mining operations.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about Amazon is I've been working with someone who studies a lot of Bitcoin, has been looking a lot into it lately. He is not... He doesn't know, but he's kind of assuming that the CEO of Amazon is intending at some point to create his own cryptocurrency blockchain and then use that on Amazon, which would completely just destroy the whole Bitcoin. That would be a huge deal. Issues
with that.
It would be massive.
Oh my gosh. I don't like Amazon that much. Well, I like Amazon, but also I don't like the power Amazon.
Yeah.
And if they did do that, that would be huge,
and it would raise a lot of legal problems. And I'm just going to give a bit of a forward plug here. I have an article coming out on net neutrality later today or tomorrow on informer.rsbnb.com, and I actually talk about Amazon and how they are heading towards that kind of direction.
Nice plug.
Thank you.
That's the second one this episode.
I just slip them in when I see an opportunity.
Can we make it free?
We'll see if we get there by the end of the show. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch and see what Bitcoin does here. But, I mean, right now, looking at this, it's down to 10,500 after topping out at 11,000. So it went up and it's come down, but still over 10,000, which is a huge deal.
It was around 5,000 in October.
Yep.
So it's been spiking lately.
Yeah. Bitcoin jumped above 9,000 at the weekend. A week before that, it was at $8,000.
Yeah, it's really speeding up now.
And that's not natural, and it's going to come back down. So
when that goes up, must come down, but yeah.
No.
One of its spinoffs recently had a big spike too.
I should have actually talked to Dave about this, because Dave has done Bitcoin mining. Dave, who hosted the podcast back in September. That would have been interesting. Should have got his thoughts on this before it went
down. Bitcoin Cash is one of the spinoffs.
Okay.
That had a big spike, and it became the first non-Bitcoin to cross $1,000 a coin.
I don't know.
And so it's been very volatile lately.
Yeah. Bitcoin Cash is there. There's also Ethereum, which also hit a high this past Wednesday of $519. So all the cryptocurrencies are going up.
That's another question. Why do we have more than one? And
there's over 1,000.
Like, why are there so many cryptocurrencies, and why would you invest in one?
Because it was really hard. Because it became really hard to mine Bitcoins, and these other ones were easier to get into.
And at this point,
it's so weird how these things can have value.
It's
the stock market,
entirely,
my friends. Does anything
it is
on the
a stock market.
Do the numbers it on the stock market have intrinsic value? No, they don't. It's
it
just
is
the way 100%
stock market, but it goes 24/7.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point of what this guy I've been talking to lately is says. It's a stock market, and that's what he does. He just plays the quote unquote stock of it.
Right.
You buy in,
yeah,
and then
but like
sell
stock,
when it goes
stock
up.
Gives you like voting rights and such. Right?
Normally,
stock
it should.
Company.
Yeah.
Right.
Part of
why there's so many is that a startup will create their own coin. I think they're called ICOs.
Initial coin offering.
Yeah, they'll make their own coins, and it's a company. Like, there's a video game company or something that wants to offer services, and they have their own coin and stuff like that. I don't know what exactly. I don't understand exactly the purpose, but it's like companies are trying to solve issues with coins in some way.
It's not natural.
No, it's not. One final note before we move on to our final segment here. Bitcoin's market capitalization is less than $200 billion. So that basically means that there are many other companies out there that are worth tons more than the entire Bitcoin stock is right now, or the Bitcoin stash. And in comparison, the world's actual traditional financial markets come in at roughly $200 trillion in market cap compared to the $200 billion of Bitcoin.
Right.
So there's a huge order of magnitude difference there. And like you guys said, it's not fully real, but it is in a stock market sense. So,
All right.
Well, there's tech news for the week. We're going to go quickly here through the skill of the month update. And boy, we have another lead change this week. JamAndy52 is in first place for our thieving skill of the month with 20.4 million XP gains so far. Flash is in second with 16.4. And the RMN is in third with 14.4 million thieving XP gained. This week, JamAndy shot past both Flash and the RMN here. So, should be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, and I think JamAndy probably has this in the bag, but we'll have to see if Flash pulls a comeback here.
Became December a couple of minutes ago for me.
Would you say if Flash runs ahead?
That's another one of those super person superhero joke things. Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Which I'll talk about in a second.
Well, that takes us into achievements of the week. I'll start off with these. First up, we got a Seafarer with 99 invention on the 29th of November. We then got Psy with 99 fishing on the 28th. Moving on to the 27th here, we have Parnassiath with 120 Slayer, Trips Travis with 99 Constitution or hit points, PTV Sully with 99 Hunter, Chodo 3000 with 99 Agility. And then I think we go on to Sirion here next for the next day.
Miss Conan 10 got 99 Fletching on November 26. Also November 26, X-Blade Z got 120 Slayer. Cyan R got 99 Agility. Questcaping got 99 Ranged. And X-Blade Z again got 120 Slayer. Shane, that's a double.
We appear to have a problem with that. I deleted it. All right, Sarah, you're up.
Sir Blue Waffle got 99 magic on the 25th, as Kotahi Atua got 99 agility on the 25th. Now on the 24th, we had Karen Angel with 99 Slayer and Chodo 3000 with 99 magic, as well as Totally with 120 invention, and Chodo again with 99 divination.
Good job, everyone. Nice achievements, and pardon the double Slayer mix-up. I apparently we are having that Slayer issue still. All right, so pick of the week time. Sierra, what do you got for us?
Well, it just aired the beginning of this week. Crisis on Earth X is a DC Comics television event on the CW television network for their four television shows, Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl. They do an annual crossover event where all the characters of each show appear on the other. It's the biggest thing they've ever attempted. It's basically a small TV movie across two nights because they're hour-long TV shows, four TV shows. it adds up. It is based on the four shows, so knowing the shows helps a little bit, but they do establish it, so it could be standalone. So it's basically a second Justice League movie in a way of the year. Without the characters of the Justice League, minus the Flash, who is in both.
I am just imagining what it looks like right now because I cannot get to the CW website. Still.
It's an event. It's certainly great. No matter what you think of the shows, it was certainly something. It had a larger budget than the shows usually have, so they just really went all out. It was a lot of fun, a lot of cool stuff. It's currently free for streaming on the CW's website, which apparently is not currently at this very moment showing up for some people, the website. But otherwise, at least in America, it is currently free to stream on that website, cwtv.com/shows/CrisisOnEarthX. I liked it. It was worth a watch, no matter what you think
of
the shows.
It looks like it's part of like four different series, like as normal episode as well. So
it is. It is.
Those episodes, would you be able to read or to watch them, I assume?
If you have access to the shows, you mean? You could watch them? Yeah.
Don't know if they are like available in, like, I think Arrow was on Netflix in the UK for a while.
Yeah, finding the others would be probably pretty hard, I think, if you're not in the US.
They only added it to Netflix, and they only added all those to Netflix after the seasons were over, and these are all in the middle of the season. Yeah. It's actually part of each show's season. You have part 1, 2, 3, and 4. Each show has their own contribution, but they all line up and
tell one
consecutive story.
Arrow is available in the Netherlands on Netflix, but nowhere else.
Oh, wow. It is basically the most superheroes in one spot until Infinity War comes out next year.
Neat. And I guess if you like superheroes, that's a good thing to watch. And that kind of goes back to some of those references in this quest.
So, better or worse than the Justice League movie?
Hard to say. I liked Justice League. I'm actually a big fan. But I'm also a big fan of the show. So this one had more of an emotional impact because Arrow has been on the longest for, it's on its sixth year. And now they have how it's expanded to this. So it's just more of an emotional impact because of how long you've been with these characters.
That makes sense.
All right. Sounds good. CWTV.com if you're in the U.S. And if not, Netflix maybe at some point, but unless you want to find it in other ways. But we won't talk about that here. So what have we been up to? Let's start with you, Sirion.
Right. I have actually gone back into the underground lair of the Invention Guild and started using some of the machines. So I turned on my auto disassembler. I turned on my... No, that's the only thing I turned on. I basically just trying to build that up. Otherwise, just doing dailies and all that kind of stuff. Mostly just work and getting ready for the holidays coming up.
Yep, December has started for you, and it's going to start for the rest of us very, very soon. All right, good to see you're making some use of the Invention Guild down there. How about you, Sarah? What you been up to on RS?
Not much. A little bit of preparation for some short story ideas I want to do, videos. But otherwise, I've been very busy working to play the game naturally.
All right. And as for me on RS, I've just been continuing to do my fishing invention via the Arc, and I made my new UI preset the other day. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep it. I'll share some screenshots and whatnot with that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. There you go. There's number three. Though that one might have been a stretch. But anyways, if you guys want full show notes, that's update.rsbnb.com. We're also in Friends Chat Bits Bytes if you want to chat with us in-game in the middle of the week. And we're also on Twitter at rsbnb if you want to send us questions, talk about the show, just send us anything you like there. But I believe that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. You guys have anything else?
Think no. I'm good.
Sarion, you good?
Yeah, I'm great.
All right, then. Well, we'll see you next week, everyone, for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Night-night, Sarah.
Good night, Sarah.
I'm not going to bed.